races over the summer continue to roll up, including Tuttawitta and Old Ghost. Need an awesome pack for your next big or small adventure? Look no further than Ultra Spire. Bryce Thatcher has been making the very best in hydration vests for 41 years, and they just keep getting better. Head over to www.ultraspire.nz for more details. While you're surfing the web for great deals, head over to Wild Things, the OG online Aotearoa and beyond trail running community. VIP members get a discount code for 3 months to shop with credit. So DCR 2023 will now give an epic new VIP member $20 credit to drop in the Wild Things shop. And obviously they get the VIP discounts with that too. Head over to wildthings.club. to check that out. Further Faster is the best independently owned outdoor store in the known universe. Whether you're heading out on climbing, paddling, tramping, or running adventures, look no further than Further Faster for all your gear and expertise needs over the summer. If you're lucky enough, head over to 57A Buchan Street, Sydenham, Otutahi, Christchurch, or hit them up on the web at www.furtherfaster.co.nz.
Like Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirt Church Radio.
This is the Dirt Church Radio Ultra Trail Kosciuszko special. I'm Matt Raymond.
Tēnā koutou katoa. I am Eugene Bingham. We made it. Well, we made it all the way here.
Yeah, holy hecka, what a day of travel we have had from Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland, all the way to Thredbo via Sydney, Canberra, and many sweet little towns on the road up. What a day, Eugene.
Yeah.
Why are we here?
Well, we're here because the race is on, the second year of Ultra Trail Kosciuszko, and along with Ellie Pottinger, we are lucky enough to be part of the commentary team.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be so good. We just sat around before, we met up, we went through some notes, and we had a good chin wag and a catch up because we're genuinely rather fond of each other, and talking about how excited we are the next couple of days, you know, putting that energy out there and meeting heaps of people and getting to share in people's stories and their journey, both to the race and within the race. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. We're in Thredbo. So if you haven't been to Thredbo before, it's an alpine village in the Kosciuszko National Park. Quite a small village.
Yeah, it's really villagey.
It's a villagey village.
It's a villagey village, and fantastic, fantastic buttery single track, even from the front door, and terrifying wildlife, the crows. There's just tons of them, and they they appear to be able to speak English or understand English at least, and they're about the size of cock spaniels, and they just shriek, and I don't want to. I sleep with one eye open tonight.
Are you going to sleep at all? That's the question.
I can hear one outside now.
Is it outside, or is it?
That's right.
Is it in your head?
Is it inside quietly?
It is. We did get out for a nice run along the single trail, and that's the thing. This area is surrounded by, there's lots of mountain bike trails, but there's also lots of running trails. So there are, so tomorrow was the 27 and 50K races, about 900 people in each. And then Friday, the big dances.
Yeah, the 100 miler and the 100K. 250 people in the 100 miler and 700 in the 100K, and they're in for a real humdinger of a run. It looks like amazing courses. The weather is beautiful. It was stonking hot today.
It was, but it's not going to be as hot tomorrow. And luckily, unlike last year, it's not going to be snowing, which is good.
No snow on the horizon as yet, but you know, things.
We are in the mountains.
We are in the mountains. But
anything could happen. It's called the snowy mountains.
For a reason.
But it would be a turn up. Look, we should crack on. We're going to bring you some interviews, some of the flavor, and just catching up with people having a good time.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing time. So stay tuned over the next 5 days. We'll be...
See how hoarse our voices get.
Yeah, indeed. I'm pretty hoarse now.
It's from yelling at crows.
Yeah, it's more shrieking. It's not yelling. But yeah, if I survive the crows.
And a kangaroo. Saw a kangaroo.
Yeah, we saw one live kangaroo, several kangaroos that passed away. And
sleeping wombat.
A sleeping wombat. So not even a euphemism. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Ditchitch Radio.
Let's just start recording this podcast about breakfasts we have had. It's a departure from...
What did you have for breakfast?
I had some Lebanese bread with some cheese on it.
I had one of those carob oat things in the car driving back from Jindy. It was good.
Ali Pottinger, welcome to our breakfasts we have on the road podcast. What did you have for breakfast?
Oh no, I'm being thrown under the unhealthy bus. Biscoff spread on toast.
What was the toast?
Just a sourdough toast.
Well, that.
And no, just in case people don't know, what is Biscoff?
It's a delicious caramelized spread, which is very high in sugar.
Sounds delicious. Anyway,
I cast the out witch. Go for it.
Right. We should get on track because it's getting late and we have to be up early. It's the day after the 27 and 50 kilometer races.
The day of.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, okay. Technical. Girl. After a day of the 27 and 50 kilometer races, Ali Pottinger has joined us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always special being on here with you guys.
Now, you not only commentated or in emceed these races, started the 27 and 50s, but then you literally started, you jumped in and raced. How was that?
It's quite different. There's a lot to organise for that, you know, when you're trying to do your job and also prepare for a running race. But it was fun. It was cool. And it's quite special because the teams that put on Ultra Trail Kosciuszko are the same team, you know, lots of the same people that put on Ultra Trail Australia, and some of the ones go to Tarawera, and, you know, it's your community. So it's really neat to be on the flip side of that and having them cheer you on or marshal you or that sort of thing. Yeah, it's cool.
And you would have got to run through the field, as it were. Well, not all the way, but you got to, you know, start at the back and then make your way through. How was that, seeing how that part of the field gets on?
Well, I kind of had both, to be honest. So I had the 50k front 50k runners overtaking me, and I was overtaking the back of the 27k. So it was kind of, I don't know, I was in the middle, you know. See these like fast thoroughbred race horses gunning it past me, and I'm also going past people that are, you know, really at the back of the pack and going to have a big day, but they're giving things a red hot crack. And yeah, it was pretty cool to kind of experience all the ends of the spectrum.
Sure. And of the three of us, you're the only one who's actually run on the course proper. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a real game of two halves there. So the Thredbo Valley track is a mountain bike trail, and it's quite lovely, flowy, you know, well compacted trails beside the river, which was nice. And I was ticking along really well, thinking, oh, this is, you know, I could be over fairly quickly. And I thought, oh, I'm quite excited because there's a bit of a hill to climb. That'll be something to look forward to. And I tempted fate there, really, because that hill was a serious, serious hill. There was a lot of people stopping, catching their breath. We're at altitude as well, so there's that to play into it. And it was the hill that kept on giving, because you'd go around a corner and then you'd see there's more, and then you go around another corner and see there's more. So I think we're probably about 5K of climbing. And, it was a lot harder than I expected. It was beautiful up there. And you're in the mountains, so there was a solid wind, but awesome view. Like, it was quite cool. You kind of get up to Eagle's Nest, which is a the top of the chairlift. So it's quite novel in that respect. And they had the music pumping, and then you make your way down quite a technical descent to the finish line to you guys, which was exciting. Yeah, so that was interesting getting to experience parts of the course and gave me even bigger respect for those people that are out there doing longer distances. The 50K runners did the hill twice. And then, yeah, we know tomorrow we've got the 100K and 100-mile runners who will be heading up there as well.
There were a lot of people crossing the finish line whose post-finish line comments we couldn't repeat on mic, could we?
No, yeah, a lot of ducks or funds, maybe combine them together and shorten it a bit.
Brother Shuckers, I heard once.
Brother Shuckers.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt, there was one lady that finished and she looked like she wanted to punch someone, and I was trying to hide my Ultra Trail Kosciuszko jersey so that I wasn't that person. She looked like she was waiting for someone to blame.
We saw a lot of that. We saw a lot of people, and people towards the front of the 50K who came over, and the initial look on their face was one of disappointment, because I think that perhaps because of, you know, you go to UTA,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about this off mic, you anticipate or you're aware of the legend of, you know, a jungle and the Grand Canyon had a baby and whānguied it to Australia, and it's hard.
It's you know, tough, it's, and you know it's going to be tough.
And you hear words like giant stairs, golden stairs, you know, Furber stairs, all those things, yeah. right? And so you have it in your head. I think people were caught out
yes.
by the technicality. Lots of people in tears. Lots of people absolutely, they, you know, we were just saying to people when they get over the line, keep moving, please keep moving. Because
yeah.
they were cast with cramps, you know, that descent mm-hmm. down the ski hill. Just brutal.
Yeah, I think it was a lot tougher than everyone expected.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like, we don't do the sport because it's easy. We know it's going to be a challenge. But yeah, I think you're right. It did catch people out for sure.
Yeah, it sure did. And some of that technical stuff, people were having to describing sort of jumping down steps yeah. rather than just stepping down them, weren't they? And just aspects that perhaps they hadn't thought. When you, 'cause we, you know, talk about, you hear the words golden steps and giant, all those things and stairs. But snowy mountains, they sound quite nice, don't they?
Snowy river.
Man from Snowy River.
Yep.
Yeah, it all sounds quite nice. So,
Banjo
anyway.
Patterson, not a very threatening name.
True.
Yeah.
True. Should we talk about some of the racing? So there were some previews that were put out before, and some elites talked about as who may come here and pick up the wins. But in the end, yeah, like quite a few surprises.
Yeah, there were a lot of surprises. I think it suited youngsters. There seemed to be quite a younger kind of a podium than expected, maybe.
Although the winner of the 50K from Finland, he was a man in his late 30s, I want to say,
mm-hmm.
perhaps early 40s, looked very, very composed. Like, he came storming down the hill. And he was covered in blood because he'd had a blood nose. I don't know how he'd had a blood nose. But he just looked completely composed. And he was...
Kari. He wasn't covered in blood, but he had a blood nose. And when I interviewed him at the finish line with my dinky microphone, we should say the microphone's got nicked overnight, so we had to use...
Yeah, shout out to the sound people.
Yeah,
because
they managed
came
that.
Through some adversity.
Yes, Andrew would have been very impressed. But he had blood in his nose. And I went, oh, you've got blood in your nose. Did you take a fall? And he went, oh, he hadn't noticed. Maybe it was the altitude. But then kind of just wiped it all over his face and then...
Shook my hand.
Shook your hand.
When I say covered in blood, because I know what blood feels like. And I was like, I shook the man's hand. I was like, his hand's covered in blood.
Anyway.
So I licked my hand and then... That's how you find out how blood types are. Just look. Yeah. Anyway.
So he's over from Finland. He just arrived in the country about 2 weeks ago to do some work in Melbourne during the Finnish winter, as you do, and then thought he'd sign up for this race. So pretty good effort.
Yeah.
Pretty good effort. But the women's race, Madison Reynolds with the victory there, 20 minutes clear
yeah,
of
clear
second and third. her first ever victory,
yeah,
in a race of any kind. She was stoked.
She was the most stoked human being ever. Like, just like, I've got heaps of friends here from work and it's really fun. And like, and I don't mean this with any kind of disrespect. She sounded like someone who'd ran an 8-hour 50K. You know, aww, she was just happy to be there. The fact that she'd just decimated the course. She came top 10 and she was, or just out, either, I mean, I don't have the, but like she was there or thereabouts overall. And yeah, there was tumbleweeds.
Did she know that about UTMB and OCC and stuff like that?
Oh, we saw a friend at the finish line tell her and she was like, what? What? She had no idea. Yeah, she was, I also had to tell her to turn her watch off.
Yes, yeah, yeah. She just left the watch
during the race line interview. She still had her watch going, and I said, "Oh, by the way, your watch is going." She was like, "What? No!" It's like, "It's okay. There's a record of this. That's okay.
There's official timing."
In the 27-kilometer, it was Thomas Spanks from Canberra took the win again. Quite a gap.
Yes,
but the women's race, Laura Gillard came home, and the other two were like right on her shoulder,
right down the hill.
And there'd been a ding dong between Eagle's Nest and getting down to the bottom, where third overtook second. You know, so yeah, Emma O'Sullivan overtook Abigail McGeechee to claim second, and yeah, they were, it was like 1-2-3, bang 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 across the finish line. So imagine that, you're charging downhill. It's quite a steep, from what it looks like, a steep downhill. Mm-hmm. Imagine racing that.
Yeah, there would be some arms flying for sure because it's so technical. It would have been fascinating to watch. Absolutely.
It was wonderful to see, like, it was really, really wonderful to see human beings running downhill. It's one of my favorite things to watch. And you saw the whole different gamut between people who were there was control, there was controlled chaos, and there was chaos, you know, and all of those things I'm here for, but whatever.
Here for all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, you respect the person who's just like, turn the governor off, you know.
Let it fly.
Let it rip. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic.
We talked about, and then I talked with you about this too, didn't I, Ellie? Watching some of those, the people at the point end of the race, just watching them come downhill, just how beautifully some people run, just the elegance of their stride and the efficiency. It's quite something, you know, I don't know, are you born with that or can you learn how to run like that?
I think you can learn. I mean, there's got to be some genetics. When I went to Japan, there's this loop around the King's Palace that's 5K, and all of you all are meant to run it in the same direction, and clearly people just do it all the time. So you see all these different body types who, you know, the whole 10,000 hours sort of thing, and their bodies have found the most efficient way of moving for them. And it's fascinating because you think, you know, like there's that stereotypical, this is how you should run, but I don't think it is that way. I think it's you know, your body just finds the best way with, you know, a lot of practice.
Isn't that funny from coaching perspectives, eh? There was the whole, and it's valid as the next sort of ideology in terms of that running form ideology. And then now it's a whole lot less didactic. People are like, run how you want to run. There's the other things. Looking at those people, all I think is, I need to do deadlifts. You know, the when you think about the core all those fundamental things, you know, I need to do more squats. Mm-hmm. I need to do more planks. I need to do more deadlifts, because that's the fundamental thing, isn't it? All those people that are running so controlled, they've just got that nice, relaxed, yet, you know, poised straight line, their core, their posterior chain. And it's a joy to watch.
Oh, yeah. It is a joy to watch beautiful runners.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, actually just runners, you know. Like runners seeing in general, happy runners.
And people, unhappy runners, let's be honest. Let's be honest. It is a joy to watch people suffering, because not from a position of like schadenfreude or taking pleasure in people suffering.
Yeah.
But because I mean, I can only speak for myself, I've suffered. You know, I felt like, you know, 10 tons of kaka in a 5-ton bag. And we've all been in those spots where it's hard and it feels insurmountable. And then watching someone who's feeling like something's insurmountable.
Yeah.
And it's insurmountable until one of their size nines crosses that tape. And then they've surmounted it and they've done it. There's a real empathic connection there, you know. So I'm here for it. I mean, not obviously like someone's femur sticking out of their skin. No, or, you know, that's a different.
On the sideline, pulling your popcorn out. Let's go.
Yeah.
But you get that growth from the challenge.
Absolutely.
And that newfound resilience that you can add to your bank.
And you might not in that moment too. I like that aspect. Yeah, like what we bring is the gift of perspective.
Yeah.
You know, like they might not feel that. I understand there was some poles thrown in the air today in anger, in distress. Oh. That person wasn't feeling that growth at that moment. They were just responding to it, right?
Yeah. And it pushes you.
Yeah.
You know, running a long way, it does. It pushes you. There were definitely moments out there today when I was going, what am I doing? Why am I doing this?
Phrase we used often was people questioning their life choices. Yeah. There's a lot of that going on, wasn't there? We should probably wrap up because we've got another long day tomorrow / the next day as the 100 and 100 mile races unfold. But have you got any, you know, particular moments to stick in your mind from today, Ellie? Maybe not even, you know, not even necessarily the racing itself or your own race, but just little moments that you saw or collections of moments that remind you of why we love this sport?
Yeah, so it was actually the second to last runner that came in, and it was dark and he'd clearly toiled away, and it was kind of what we were talking about earlier. And he crossed the line, fell to the ground crying. His family were there and they're crying and they've got their phone out and they're trying to get his daughter to him and his Ecuadorian flag, and they had this big cuddle kind of on the ground. And after maybe 2 or 3 minutes, he got up and he was just saying, oh, you know, like, where's the sweet gone? I wouldn't have made it without them. Like, I have so much, you know, to thank them for. And he was so emotional, like, I couldn't have done it with them. And he just so appreciated what the sweeper had done to support him. And I think that will be one of his probably biggest achievements from my witness perspective. But it was beautiful. And, you know, like, you've got the wet eyes happening there. Yeah, it made me cry. It did.
I was stone today.
What?
Heart of stone. Oh,
we had a sweepstake last night and we all put money on Matt. So, oh, wow. Who gets the money now?
Well, not Ellie.
Yeah.
We didn't even agree on amount, did we?
Who's buying the pizza tomorrow?
It'll be Maddie. It'll be me then. I'll do it.
Matt, what about yourself?
And maybe they'd run, maybe they hadn't. We were talking about it before. There was a group of gentlemen behind me and Eugene who were at the start and they were at the finish, and they were cheering on their friends. And they'd had a couple of beverages, they'd had a couple of beers, and they were loud. And I felt myself being a bit of a curmudgeon, like, God, I just, you know, rah, rah. And then I realized that they weren't just cheering their friends on. They were cheering every single person that came across that line, aww, like they were their best friend.
Oh, that's and so cute.
Genuinely. You know, they were so amped to be there in that moment.
Awesome.
And both from a feeling of like, you're just, it's not a transactional thing. You're being unconditional. You're giving your unconditional positive warm regard, your unconditional love to these people in that moment. And both having been on that side of the fence of just, you know, we congratulate people and we do that, but also that feeling of when you cross that line and you have someone going, you rock that, mate. And you don't know them from bar of soap, but they're so unmistakably, there's the golf clap, you know, you pass that person, they'll give you the golf clap, but there's the guy without a shirt on yelling at you, pointing at you, you know. That really, I found my kind of I really gave myself an uppercut in that moment and went, like, they're as fizzing as we are to be here, you know, and they've actually made that. So that was my moment of the day, actually.
What about you, Eugene?
I think it's kind of like a collection of moments. I thought there was a really high proportion of people who did this race together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there was. And
so for me, if there's one word for today, it was mateship and friendship, wasn't it? And, you know, so many people who ran together, supported each other. And we would say to them, you know, because you're never sure, eh? When people join hands and cross the finish line, it's like, well, have you just met 5 minutes earlier? And they're like, nah, we started together. We were going to finish together. And there was so much of that in this race. And so lots of people supporting each other, enjoying each other's friendship. It was a father and son came through, wasn't there, when we finished. And I'm not sure if he was the grandfather or someone was trying to get them a hurry along, but no, they were going to soak up every moment of this bonding opportunity that they were getting together. And so, yeah, for me, it's friendship, mateship that we saw in abundance today. Right. Should we go to bed?
Let's go to bed.
Yeah. It's a long day tomorrow, long day Saturday. Thank you for joining us, Ellie. We always love having a chat with you, and hopefully you'll join us again in the days to come.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you guys. I always enjoy my time with you.
I caught up with Tuomas Kari from Finland, the winner of the 50 kilometre. Can I just get you, first of all, just to tell me how to say your name properly?
Tuomas.
Tuomas.
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay. Well, welcome to the podcast, to Dirt Church Radio. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations.
Thank you, and very nice for you having me on the podcast.
Oh, not at all. So winning the race yesterday, was that something that you'd expected?
Not really. I knew I was among the favorites because I came ranked third to the race, but it was a very, very competitive field, I think. So, of course, coming out with a win, especially with a 10-minute margin, was a big surprise for me. But I had a pretty good day also, so I'm very pleased with my run yesterday.
How did the race unfold from your perspective? How, you know, at what point did you manage to get away? Because you did build up quite a lead.
We already from the beginning, we were three guys running together for the first 20K. And then after the first aid station, it was me and Gogan running together, me and him, until the big climb started. And then in the big climb, I got, I think, 2.5 minute gap to Gogan. And then I got a lot of confidence out of that and just started like rolling a bit more pace and was able to grow the lead from there on.
Yeah. We were just talking about that final descent and the traffic that you encountered with people, some people going back up and the 27 kilometer people coming back down, so was that a factor? Was that something you had to worry about because you no doubt wanted to keep away from second place? Were you concerned about that? About, were you worried that you might be caught?
Of course, when you are in the lead, you always think that, and you don't know how far the people are behind you. So of course, it's always in your mind that what will you do if people catch you? But then I also knew that I have pretty good feeling at the moment, and I was able to build a gap. So I was expecting the gap to actually grow maybe a little bit because I was able to do more gap. And then when I heard actually at one point that how much the difference to back was, and I was a bit surprised that it was so big. So then, yeah, I just started enjoying and kept pushing.
Yeah, fantastic. And so you arrived in Australia, what, 3.5 weeks ago or something?
10 days ago, actually.
10 days ago?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So what's brought you to Australia?
Sorry?
Why have you come to Australia?
I'm actually working here for 3 months. Or like not actually working, but visiting researcher for work. So,
what do you do? What's your work?
I have my background in information system science, but currently I'm researching virtual nature solutions. So taking the nature indoors with virtual means and letting people who can't access nature for one reason or another to have these nature experiences as well.
Oh, wow. So sharing the trails that you get to enjoy with people who can't access them.
Exactly.
What a fascinating piece of research.
Yeah, it's quite interesting.
So what point did you decide to enter this race?
Pretty much the next day when my trip to Australia was settled.
You just see what races are there and then go for it. So you've raced a lot in Europe, and I think you mentioned yesterday you have been to Australia but hadn't raced here, is that right?
Yeah. I was spending also, I think, 6 weeks in Melbourne 2018, and then I only did like one orienteering race there, but no other races at that time.
Is your background in orienteering?
Yeah. So I've been into trail running for 3 years now, and before that I did 30 years of orienteering, or like since I was a very little kid,
yeah.
I did competitive orienteering.
Yeah. So where was home? Where did you grow up?
In Finland, in southern Finland, yeah.
And is orienteering a strong sport there? The Finns are known for it, obviously, but in your particular area, was it something that, you know, you were always going to be an orienteer?
Yeah, my father did orienteering, so he brought me to these local clubs training, and the local club happened to be one of the biggest ones in Finland, so yeah, I got a lot of good friends there and enjoyed the sport, so it was like really, really fun to do that sport for a long time.
Yeah. There's a lot of crossover between orienteering and trail running, and we find lots of people doing both, or, you know, in either direction. What encouraged you to switch to trail running?
Well, basically, I had done orienteering for so long and pretty much experienced all the big races there was, and I felt that I couldn't get any better in orienteering anymore, and it was not motivating in a way for me anymore. So then I started looking into different options. I did few road marathons and then tried trail running, and it just took my heart, and I'm still on that path.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you've raced a bit in Europe, I see.
Yeah. Especially this year, I went, I think, 6-7 different countries doing a lot of different big races in Europe, and including the World Championship in Austria in the beginning of June.
And so this victory earns you a spot at the UTMB Festival. Will you go next year?
Definitely, yeah. That was actually my goal here, to be top three, to get a ticket to UTMB week next week. So I'm really happy about that and really much looking forward to running OCC next year.
OCC,
yeah.
Oh, well, I hope that your time in Australia goes well, and that your preparations for that and any other races that you do goes well. But congratulations and thanks for the chat.
Thank you.
Digits Radio.
Who am I talking with?
My name's Devin Beckman. I'm the marketing manager for Ultra Trail Kosciuszko by UTMB.
First off, it's so nice to finally get you on the record, the elusive Devin Beckman. But how important to you after last year with the alternate course was it that this iteration of Cozzy go well?
I think the thing with this year, or the thing with this event, is that we knew we had such an amazing event. We had amazing courses, an amazing destination, this amazing product that we've just been wanting to deliver. And unfortunately, we couldn't do that last year. And while we still had an amazing event, it just wasn't what we expected and what we knew was possible. So to finally get it up this year and it to go really well and have amazing weather, and for all the runners to see just how amazing the trails here in the Snowy Mountains are, that's kind of, bringing it to life. That's why we do what we do, is so that everyone can enjoy it. And yeah, this year we finally can.
For a place that's so gorgeous and has so much great trail around, it doesn't seem like the Snowy Mountains has that sort of running tradition. Did you find that people were perhaps, if not reluctant, but a bit surprised at the choice of venue?
I think, yeah, I mean, there's obviously other events around, and there's, like events like Costa Cozzi that have been in this region for a long time. And I guess the Snowy Mountains is more known for skiing and snowboarding in the winter and the sort of winter sports, and then more recently more mountain biking. But we kind of took a look at the location and you know, the way that it's set up with the alpine villages and with the different networks of trails. And it's very similar to kind of what you see over in Europe, right? You have all these little ski towns that are dotted around the mountain, and you kind of just run from town to town and check in at the aid stations or the checkpoints and fuel up and then head back into the mountains. And that's kind of the experience that we thought we could create here. So, you know, we had the basis of an amazing alpine destination. We had these amazing trails that have been built for hiking and mountain biking that everyone can come and enjoy, and then, you know, linking it all up together to create some awesome courses.
Did you have a distinct, you know, obviously Eugene and I are here, we're part of the commentary team, and you were really clear and intentional around the vibe of Kosciuszko and what it means, and what it means for the participants. What's that process like when you're planning an event, that where you come up with that sort of specific, you know, what the event means or what you want it to mean to people? How does that work?
I guess we really just want people to see what we see. And, you know, as people that work in events, we see a lot of different events and a lot of different experiences. And that's what we're really trying to create, is a unique experience that people can come and enjoy. And the unique experience that we're trying to create here is this amazing aspirational trail run that we want people to be inspired by and motivated to come and compete in, and in a super awesome destination. So the Snowy Mountains, being sort of the Alps of Australia, it's quite a different sort of setting than you get elsewhere in Australia. It's, you know, granite outcrops, it's snow gum forests, it's these lakes and these streams that you just don't really get anywhere else other than here in the Snowy Mountains. And I think bringing people to come and experience this and see it for themselves, and be motivated by being able to get out on the trails, being, you know, able to experience that nature at its breathtaking best almost, and just see it for what it is and see the event as we kind of envisioned it. You know, we want people to be able to push themselves in a safe space to achieve what they probably never thought was possible, and we want to create a platform for that, and so that they can experience it.
And I guess this is the thing, you know, you are the marketing manager for the trail, the dirt aspect of Ironman, but you're very personally connected to trail running, and what's your background in the outdoors? I mean, where did you sort of come into the space?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been trail running or in the outdoors doing stuff since forever, since I can remember. Yeah, when we were kids, we would always be out hiking and doing family tramping trips, or, you know, running, going out on the trails. I mean, I race triathlon as well, so there's that side of me that obviously plays in with Ironman. But yeah, I kind of, where I come from is definitely more on the dirt side, being out, just adventuring, exploring. It's less, so much less about, you know, the nuts and bolts of times and training and trying to be kind of the best that you can be, and more about just experiencing these amazing places and doing it with people and sharing that experience with people. And I think that's where trail running really, well, that's kind of like the basis of what trail running is all about, is that shared experience that you get. And it translates from where I came from, yeah, being a trail runner for as long as I can remember, being an orienteer and spending a lot of time in nature, going to places around the world that you know, you would never think about ever going to, that are so off the map, off the beaten track, but because you had these competitions here, or because you're going to this trail run, or you're going to this event, you get taken to these amazing places that most people will never see, and you, yeah, take those memories away, and just, it's just something that I feel, yeah, super grateful to have experienced those trips and those places and those memories, because I know so few people will, and yeah, just those are the memories. It's not the, you know, it's not the big cities, or it's not even the times or the results or anything like that that you kind of remember as you go through competing or go through racing. Like, it's the fact that you were there, you saw this place, you were with these people. That's what kind of you take with you.
And I mean, and you're someone, you know, like you said, you are, you know, how many times do we bump into each other at the trailhead in Riverhead on a Saturday morning? You know, you've come and done, you know, obviously you said you race triathlon, you do the Ironman, you've come and, I mean, I've lost count of how many times you've done, how many times have you done Riverhead Rampage?
Three Riverhams, I think. Yeah.
And you've done quite well.
Yeah, I think a couple, I just missed the podium a couple of times. Yeah, last time I did it, it was the week after I did a 70.3 half Ironman, so I was a little bit tired, but that's kind of, we're going back and forth, can be a bit hard sometimes. I'm kind of one of those people that I can't do one thing for too long. Like, I love trail running, but if I just did trail running, I would get too bored, and yeah, so that's where I pick up mountain biking, and I'll go and ride my mountain bike for a couple months, or I'll, you know, get into triathlon again, because you have those variations of sports, but I can't just stick to one thing. Like, I got to move around and keep it fresh.
Keeps you fresh. And how was your Kepler experience? I mean, it was a week ago.
Less than
a week ago. How are you feeling? I mean, your day didn't go exactly as you wanted it, but how has the recovery been?
Yeah, I woke up a little bit sick a few days before Kepler, and then was pretty sick on race day. So the goal pretty quickly changed from doing a good time to just making it to the finish. But, you know, after having run Kepler in 2020 and having to run the contingency course, which still super grateful I got to run, and that was my longest run at the time, and finished my first ultra, which was really cool. But this year, being able to do the full loop, get up to the top of the mountains, we had an amazing sunrise that morning, just, you know, the oranges and the pinks coming up over the hills and reflecting off the lake. It was just being in that space of, you know, I kind of came into that race week thinking, you know, I had my times for my checkpoints that I wanted to hit. I had a goal time in mind. I, you know, knew that if I put it together and I had a good day, I could be in and around being reasonably competitive. But obviously that all went out the door when I woke up a bit sick and chundered a few times before the start. So being able to stop and appreciate and, you know, stop looking at your watch and just be like, wow, look at this amazing place that I'm in. And then Kepler's just, yes, it's, you know, it's the oldest ultra in New Zealand, but it's also so rooted in that grassroots community, that Tiano community, the trail running community of New Zealand. Like, the people that come out and support that event, the volleys are just amazing. The aid stations are amazing. Yeah, the volley that checks my gear up at Luxmore Hut this year, their theme was medical. It was like doctor theme. I think he introduced himself as Dr. Malpractice, so that gave me a little chuckle. But yeah, just like the support that community gives, and that trail runners bring to Te Anau as well, and just being in Te Anau and feeling like the whole town is overrun with trail runners is just such a cool experience. And yeah, that's like, you know, trail running, grassroots trail running at its best at Kepler, really.
Yeah, it really doesn't get more community based than that. And this is the thing, isn't it? These events are like, I always compare it to, you know, you run away to join this, and especially working at these events, you run away to join the circus for the week. How long, what's your process? I mean, you know, you're here, you in the lead up, there's the marketing, and then there's the event itself. You're here, you're there, you're everywhere. What's the downtime or recovery process and for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, marketing's a unique one. We're kind of almost always on year-round marketing, especially for our trail running events. So, yeah, basically as soon as the previous year's event's wrapped up, we almost always have the next year's event locked in, date locked in, and then we're working towards entries opening, which is usually around 10 months out from the event. But we're, you know, looking at the event, we're taking the feedback from our community, from our survey results, seeing what we did well, seeing what we didn't do so well, what we can improve on, and then tweaking the kind of product or the event to, you know, be better for next year. Taking a look at our courses, taking a look at our venue, saying what we can do to improve. So that's a huge process that we go through post-event. And then from there, we obviously open entries. We are then, you know, basically my job is to encourage people to sign up to run crazy distances. So we're doing that all year long. And it kind of just, it's just a big build. From when, you know, that day that we open entries is, we kind of talk about it as the start of the journey that people go on. Because yes, the start might be, you know, the actual start of their journey might be a start line, but getting that entry, having been committed to being on that start line is such a big first step. And, you know, the courage that it takes for you to sign up for your first trail run even, or your first ultra, or your first 100K, or your first miler. Like, just actually signing up and, you know, being committed to being there is such a big step. And we want to, you know, that's my goal, is to help people take that first step. And then once they're signed up and once they're committed, it's how can we help you have your best event ever? So we, you know, that's where the participant comes in. That's where all the website info comes in. We basically want to try and hold your hand as much as we can to allow you to arrive at the event, arrive on race week, as prepared as you can be. You have all the knowledge, you have all the training done, you've got your gear, you know where you're going, and you can just roll up, relax, have a good time, and have your best event. Because, yeah, we know that events don't just start and finish on race day. They are a year-round commitment for all of our runners. You know, that people are planning months, years in advance, so that's where we're dedicated to helping you get there as well.
Wow, it's that thing, isn't it? It's the continuous nature, and I guess as well, like, you're even now sort of probably building or thinking about the next event on the calendar, which is Tarawera.
Yeah, we basically don't stop. So I have seven events in my portfolio. So I have. Basically, you know, we go from one event to the next pretty rapidly. And even now this weekend, yes, I'm here on the ground at Cozzy, but I have another event happening this weekend in Taupo with the 70.3 that I'm keeping a close eye on, and trying to make sure that runs really smoothly as well. So, Tarawera is the next trail run in our portfolio, and that's coming up in February. 15 years of Tarawera in 2024. It's pretty incredible, you know, to see where that event has come from back in 2009 to where it is today. I've only been a part of the event since 2020, but even in those last couple of years, to see how the community's grown, how the event's grown, and how much it's been supported, and how the internationals have come back through after COVID, and, really excited to get back on the ground at Tarawera. And, that really, to me, that event is just, that's just my... I have such a big heart for that event. Like, I grew up, my family would go to Rotorua for summer holidays. We'd take the ski boat, we'd take the mountain bikes, we'd go run on those trails. So I know all of those trails around Tarawera so well from my childhood, and being able to go there and hold an event there and allow other people to share those trails and, share the manaaki, the warm welcomingness of the Rotorua people is super special. And yeah, Tarawera definitely has a pretty soft spot in my heart.
Yeah, us too. It's amazing, isn't it, how even though the event has changed in itself, and I guess that's the good thing about events, is that if you came back every year and it was exactly the same, and if you think about something like Kepler, which is, it's on a great walk, so it is going to be nominally the same. There's always changing circumstances, or people are tweaking things, or people are, you know, making things happen. An event like Tarawera, which, you know, it's been here, there, and everywhere in terms of course. It used to run from Kawerau into Rotorua to Kawerau, and I've done it twice. I've never run back, so I've never run from Kawerau to Rotorua. I've only done it the other way, yeah. And so that, even thinking
the,
about
the
that,
Paul Charteris, yeah, homage,
yeah, the homage back to the old country. That's right. And what a, you know, thinking about that, having talked to Paul about that, what an amazing thing that he was like, yeah, I wanted, you know, Kawerau had at one time the greatest per capita income in the country with the paper mill, you know, and the challenges that place has faced. So trying to put that on the map and make it a place that's, you know, it's a real, that is the essence of community, I guess, hey?
Yeah, I mean, what Paul has done for not only for Kawerau or for Rotorua, but for the trail running community in New Zealand is, you know, you can't deny the impact that he's had. You just look at, you know, take the Tarawera 100 miler, for example. Like, that was Paul's baby. That was the whole reason that he started Tarawera, was because he saw what Western States was, and he said, I want to bring that 100 mile experience from Western States and do that in New Zealand in my hometown. So back in 2009, those initial distances all were about building up to bringing in this 100 miler, which he finally did in 2018. And, you know, that first year, I think they had like 100 runners. And that 100 mile distance, it was crazy to think about running 100 miles. Now, this year, we're going to have over 500 100 miler runners. Like, the popularity of that distance has just exploded. It's going to be, you know, one of the biggest biggest 100 miler race in New Zealand, but you know, it's the biggest 100 miler, bigger than any 100 miler over here in Australia. It's one of the most renowned. We attract amazing international athletes to come and race that event, and that's all down to Paul and his vision and his motivation to bring the magic of that 100 miler distance to New Zealand and to Rotorua.
Tempted with 100 miles?
Oh, it's definitely on the list one day. And I think having worked Tarawera, obviously the Ponamu and that, the magic of that, like, I would definitely want to earn my own Ponamu and race that one day, but definitely not while I work at Ironman, I think. it's pretty hard to fit in training for Kepler, for other smaller races, let alone 100 miles. And I would want to have a good crack at it. Like, I would have a goal time in mind. I would want to race it, you know, how I want to race it. I don't want to just roll around and finish in 36 hours. I know that for a lot of people that's their goal, but I think we all have our own individual goals. It's like, people hopefully have seen the Carl Reed piece that we did on his two cracks at Tarawera, and you know, he speaks about how he doesn't want his Tarawera finish to be hobbling over the finish line in 30 hours. He wants to race it how he races it, to pay respect to the course. And I think that's how I look at it as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Everyone has their own, and I sort of fall into that bracket as well. And not if I was going to do it, the thought of being on my feet for that long, not to take away from anyone else, it doesn't appeal to me. And if the race changed for the moment, then we deal with that. But it's an interesting one, isn't it? That the 100 mile distance has become so popular, and people who haven't raced 100k jumping up into that space. It's what do you think it is?
I think it's probably a combination of things. I think the visibility of the 100 mile distance now, like the fact that, you know, the marketing that we do around the 100 miler, we put it up on this pedestal, we tell people that this is the pinnacle event that you should be aiming for. But then, you know, you take a look at like social media and things like that, and the role that they have to play, like the amount of posts or, people that from this weekend, even from their doing the 27K, 50K, any distance, you know, people sharing their story saying, look, I ran this 27K, I ran this 50K. Like, I think there is a nature of humans to want to accomplish things and knock things off, and the big round number of 100 miles, it's the biggest, baddest endurance challenge really out. I mean, yes, there's longer runs, yes, there's bigger fish to fry, but in terms of a super palatable, in terms of, you know, you talking to your mate at work and they say, oh, what'd you do on your weekend, you say, oh, I ran 100 miles, everyone clicks and knows what that means. They know that was bloody hard, they know that you probably gave and sacrificed a heap to do that, and you're probably a legend of a human because you ran 100 miles. Like, that's kind of what Ironman racing is as well, right? Like, you say to someone you've done Ironman, yeah, they might not know that you swam 3.8 k's, rode 180 k's, and ran a marathon, but they know that you did this incredible endurance feat, and that's the same thing now that 100 miles are becoming.
Well, man, I mean, you're in for a busy couple of days. I better let you go, but I really appreciate this chance to talk to you, and thankful to be here as much as anyone else, and can't wait to see what the next 2 days bring.
No, 100%. Thanks to you and Eugene for coming out. It's great to have a bit more of a Kiwi presence over here in Australia and bring some of the Kiwi humour to the microphone, which is always entertaining for me at least. So obviously to tell everyone about this awesome event. This year we grew from 2,000 runners last year, 3,000 runners this year. Hopefully we keep pumping it up and people come and see the magic of the Snowies for themselves.
Yeah, start of a long tradition. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Ditchit Radio.
I am so sunburned.
That's the start of today's podcasting.
Well, it's the end point, okay, really, isn't it? We're going to do a rundown of the day. I just want to get that out of the way because I'm in physical pain. So please be sun smart. That's the first thing I'd like to say.
That's good advice, actually. Advice you didn't take, Nurse Matt. Anyway, so we have wrapped up with all the runners at Ultra Trail Kosciuszko have finished. We had, well, the ones who were going to. The 100K and the 100-mile races have unfolded, I think is the best way to put it, over the last 2 days. What a, I mean, the fury that was thrown at those runners out on that course.
Yeah, it was. So there was a common word that was being used at the finish line, and it was brutal, was the common theme. The weather was so all over the show, like really hot, rain like you haven't seen before, lightning storms, and
hail.
And the courses, like, they were tough, and the times were slow.
I just did some, because, you know, sometimes we like to inject facts, but at Tarawera, there were 114 sub-24-hour runners, right, this year. Yep. At Ultra Trail Kosciuszko, in the mile I'm talking about, 18.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a smaller field, and Tarawera had, you know, arguably, in a quite easy course this year, but still 114 versus 18.
Yeah. I was reflecting on the 50K runners and the 27K runners coming over, and the 27K runners, there was some sort of disgruntlement and there was some varying degrees of success. You know, I'm stoked to be here. The 50K runners, there were so many people who came over that course who looked angry when they finished. And I've been thinking about it the last couple of days. It's because they were distressed, because that course had kicked them about.
Yeah, they underestimated it.
Totally underestimated it.
Yeah.
And Eugene and I mean, you did the 27K course. You did that descent. Eugene and I took the criminally misnamed, I'm sorry, Merritt's Nature Walk. Sounds like you could take Nan on it.
Does sound very lovely.
Auntie Gwen, shall we go up Merritt's Nature Walk to the second highest point in Australia in a direct line? And that was your descent.
Yeah.
You know.
And ascent. No. The ascent was up the ski slopes.
Which was even more brutal.
But to Eagle's Nest.
Yeah.
To the same destination.
Yeah.
At 1,900 metres above, 1,930 metres above sea level.
That's right.
Now, this is brutalising people. And I think people look at UTA and go, oh, yeah, it's up, it's down, it's up, it's down. And they saw the elevation gain profile and thought, oh, easy, I can do that. And that was replicated across the 100 and the miler as well.
Yeah. And it's at altitude too. And I reckon that actually has played a part. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wonder if they, maybe we overheard some runners at the airport at Sydney, Canberra. When Sydney, we were waiting for the flight to Canberra, and they were talking about how they were planning on negative splitting this course.
Yeah, this dude was like, and I won't do the accent. That he was going, look, you've just got to run your own race. You've just got to run your own race. But yeah, we take it. Like, I'm going to negative split it. I'm going to negative split it. Yep, I'm going to do it. I'm going to negative split it. And we were sort of chuckling into our sushi, like, looking at each other, thinking, in any 50K with that. With the, you know, the hills at the end, you're not going to negative split it. But the course, the technicality, the altitude. I mean, we heard from Andreas Romanius.
Yep.
Elite runner, scientist, medical doctor,
yep.
Who was going, the elevation just really punished me.
Yeah, the altitude. On the storm, so a big thunderstorm came through, didn't it? You guys were here at the finish line at that point, waiting, and you had to be evacuated inside. I was talking to a runner who was out in that storm, and they got pulled off the course kind of to shelter in some bushes or something when a lightning strike hit a tree 30 metres from them. Mm. And so then they were like, whoa, that was close. And then they waited a while, and it looked like the storm had moved on, and they thought, I will be right. So they went off, it turned around and came back at them again. How terrifying would that be?
It was, well, for us it was quite terrifying. Yeah. We went out in the wild.
No, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, we sort of looked up in the front came over in a straight, the cloud, it was like a straight line. It came over, it started to rain really heavily. We were like, yeah, no worries, put that. And then we heard the lightning, we saw the lightning, heard the thunder, and it was like, you know, you do the count, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, oh, that's about 10 kilometers away, whatever. And then it was getting closer and closer and closer and closer.
Yeah.
Then they evacuated, they're like, everyone inside. Mm. Now. And people were running inside. We were confused because we had the mics. We're like, do we come in? We were waiting on the first female finisher.
Yeah.
It got super hectic. There was a dude who kept running outside. He had a massive copper bell and he was waving it around.
Is that where the saying bell in comes from?
Oh, I'm not sure. But I did actually say into the mic, and this was a quote, you know, like, if you're not listening to us and you're waving a copper bell around, like, we can't.
He actually this
is in Jesus's hands now. Like, you can, you know. But there was that real consideration of a lightning strike. You know, and we were squeezed into an alcove at one point, like against the Threadbow thing. And then I sort of ran over into the sound tent and then realized the most electrical equipment is in this place. And then I ran into the merch tent and then was really worried because there's so much nylon, you know. But I couldn't have imagined being,
yeah.
I mean, what were we at that point?
We were like 7 o'clock at night. So.
Yeah, 13 hours into. 13 hours into a 30-hour run,
and
you've just been schwacked. Oh,
They were
schwacked.
And then they were schwacked by the sun, because this afternoon it got really hot, didn't it? So they basically had every... What's that?
Matt knows.
Stop, yeah, I do.
Yeah, and he does. Take your glasses off. No, Matt, take your glasses off. Anyway, look, you were both at the finish line for the 100K... Again, took a lot longer than we thought it would, but Patricia McKibben, from Australia, took out the 100K, and Japan's Roy Ueda was the winner. What were those races like?
I think Patricia she kind of had it all over the other girls by quite a bit. Amazing. I mean, they were all phenomenal athletes.
Phenomenal.
Did a superb job, but yeah, Patricia, was very convincing.
24 minutes.
Yeah.
And Rui, he was, when they left Nagargo, he was at least 30 minutes up on second place.
Yeah.
But he'd burned the boats. He had burned the boats. He had no, you know, he's here on holiday from Japan. You know, he said in the thing, he saw a kangaroo, so it's like day made. he had no support crew, so he was running. He was off the front the whole race. And second place made up 15 minutes on him. So it was the law of diminishing returns. Like he was on fumes when he came through, still running super strong. But, I mean, 9:49.
Yeah.
Which
is, they were really slow 100K wind times.
Yeah. Which sounds ridiculous, right, to say that. But true, at a Tarawera?
Yeah. Even UTA.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so now quite. And like I left last night, and there's about 15 hours, 40 on the clock, and there'd only been 50 100K finishes, which shows.
Yeah.
You know, normally Tarawera will be well into the thick of it. Mm. In UTA as well, you'll have seen kind of the top 20, well, more, probably 40% of men and 30% of women.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then in the miler, you know, 19 hours for the winner.
Yeah. We'd both gone home.
Yeah.
In fact, it was just getting super, that's the thing, isn't it? When you look at that bell curve and Eugene, you know, you were the night train this race, and I was thinking, geez, I wonder how he's going to kind of do, because everyone will be through. I was thinking that everyone will be through and it'll be like he'll be, you know, racking the crowd up and kind of keeping things through. And it was just getting busy when I was leaving. There was the dam opening and you're seeing the trails of lights coming down the hill. But we hadn't had a first 100-mile finish.
No. So, yeah, Chris Linkage, first time 100-mile runner, won in 19 hours. But, yeah, he didn't arrive until 1 o'clock. You know, that's – I think it was still light when the first 100-mile runners arrived at Tarawera this year, wasn't it? Yeah. Zach, yeah. Yeah, Lucy may have even arrived in the light, I think, or just
yes,
about.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. But that was a race. He had Takumi Sawanagi, right on his tail, and they were like, you know, he was just ringing the bell when second place came in.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was like just over 2 minutes. But Manuela Sokol from Belgium just dominated in the women's. She, what an amazing athlete.
Yeah, it was her first 100-miler. And, I mean, if you're at Tarawera the year that she won, she's quite a memorable character, just like really happy-go-lucky and kind of giggly. And, yeah, she threw down and it was cool. So I did not expect to be there for the first female finisher. Like, that was about 4:10 in the morning, which when you compare to Tarawera, that's like it's kind of, 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night, something like that. So it just shows the difference. And I mean, that's 4 a.m. started Tarawera too, but shows the difference in how tough that 100-mile course was.
Yeah.
And yeah, she did super well. It was so cool to see. Yeah. Really fun to be there for her celebration.
Yeah, she's such a fun character, isn't she? And I was showing Matt the video of her ringing the bell. It's like the bell took control of her.
It's like Newton's third law was in full effect, eh?
We need to make somebody jump in, save her. But that women's field, that was the most stacked of all the races this weekend, wasn't it? Amazing athletes. All could easily have laid claim to the title.
Yeah, so I think last year's winner was 4th place this year. And there was, let me have a look at that. Oh, Steph Austin, she knows how to go to the well, that girl. She fought hard all day. And then Claire O'Brien Smith was an interesting one. So she said that she was in 7th place pretty much all day and just finally started chipping away at them and ended up 3rd place. So she was stoked. Yeah.
Run your own race.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's what she said. She was like,
your interview with the 3rd place male finisher in the 100, the British lad?
Oh my goodness, he was so funny.
There was a ring, there was a real ding dong in the in that last section, and we actually got and Ali's interviewing him, and she goes, "Look, you know, there was a real battle between you, and I just want to know what happened." He goes, "Well, I passed him." And I looked back a couple of times and he wasn't there. So shrugged his shoulders and there was a sort of dead air. It was so funny. I mean, but it again, that shows to that sort of the difficulty, hey? But he's like, I just passed him.
That was so hilarious.
So nonchalant. And Emily Gilmer-Walsh as well. And, you know, what a wahine toa she's been in the Australasian trail running scene. And then you interviewed her afterwards and she was in tears, wasn't she?
Yeah, so she said, it was 3 or 4 years in the making. Yeah. So I think she'd not had a successful kind of miler campaign, so it was really neat to be there for her achieving that, and obviously placing really well as well. But, yeah, it was pretty special.
Speaking of tears, there were a few spilled on the finish line.
We had a bet.
We did. But I think between us all,
we had a bet who would cry first, and you two being doubtful and me being the most apparently emotionally dysregulated of the group and said that you both bet on me.
Straight away, it was a deadpan, yeah. Matt. Yeah.
And sorry, who did?
It was me.
Yeah, it
was. I don't know why I'd expect it to be you.
Well, because it's absolutely true. Like, I get super emotional about things. And I have Welsh heritage, so we're race of criers. But
the GPS says, you have arrived at your destination of Threadbow. Matt's in tears.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful.
Absolutely. I'm so good. But that's the thing, isn't it? You look at the sport, you go, okay, cool. If you were reading it on paper, so you're going to not hang out with your family as much. You're going to withdraw, you know, you're going to withdraw, you're going to be tired a lot, you're not really going to be that up to pack for much, you know, financial stuff, blah, 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 blah. You'd look at the sport and go, that's pretty solitary, it's pretty self-absorbed. But if you intertwine the stories, like, and the thing, the, you know, the one that got me going, and I was so angry that it did, but why wouldn't it, was around, you know,
the umbrella.
The umbrella. It was around an umbrella.
So this old
I got stuck in the man. Eye. It stuck me in the eye with an umbrella and I cried a tear. So technically I cried.
He had this beautiful umbrella and it still had the tag hanging off it. And I thought, I don't know why, but I said, that's a really beautiful umbrella. Because it was kind of like this, it didn't seem like it was his umbrella because it was this Mediterranean,
yeah,
kind of brightly coloured, flowery, beautiful.
Had a pattern of a vista on it, yeah.
And then Matt, you finished the story.
No. what he said was, and he had a really thick Irish accent, and he said, you know, this has been hanging on my wall for 5 years, and this is the first time I've taken it out. And he said, my dear wife died 6 years ago.
And she'd bought it,
and she'd bought it. And so he'd had this thing hanging on his wall for 6 years and obviously hadn't, you know, and he was sitting, you know, he asked after his nephew and his nephew's here and, you know, I'm here for him and rah, rah. And that was fine. That bit was fine. Not a problem. I was like, you know, I'm sorry for your loss and that's really kind of sweet. It was the fact that he had travelled from County Kerry in Ireland to meet his nephew. At the start of that hunt, and when I heard that, I just started, just the waterworks go, I just went from 0 to 100. Like, I was like, ah! And he'd bought his wife's umbrella, you know, that thing of, this is, yeah, it's significant.
Mm. But there were so many, I mean, there's so many, yeah, we said this repeatedly, didn't we? It's human emotion writ raw at the finish line of an ultra, and there were so many little moments, people who, a guy, I think you were there, I don't know what day it is, who had run for his friend who died 6 months earlier. There was a father and daughter who ran together and crossed the line together, and that was pretty emotional. There were a couple of brothers who came in. You know, there was, you know, lots of people, and then the people who didn't even know each other but had battled and fought to get to the finish line, and then they cross the finish line and suddenly they're embracing and bawling their eyes out. And on it goes, doesn't it? It's just, no wonder we're emotional wrecks right now.
Yeah, there was also a support crew and they had basically adopted this other older man that was trying to crew for his daughter. Uh-huh. And she had said to them, I'm a bit worried about him. He, you know, he doesn't really quite know what he's doing and he's a bit old. And they basically adopted him and adopted her and cheered her on. It was pretty neat.
So much so. So they were nurses from Dunedin.
Yeah.
And they adopted, they came up and explained this to us afterwards because they adopted this other runner who they didn't know so well that we just convinced that they were with that runner.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And we were like, look at your support crew. They've been amazing. Look at this. It's amazing. There's such a... And then they came up to us quietly afterwards and were like, actually, we didn't know. We would just explain what had happened. And then they had to hang around for their runner who came in.
How amazing.
It was, well, yeah.
That's
yeah.
just proof putting that nurses rule.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nurses from Dunedin especially. But can we talk about, look, we've had the emotional, the crying and the you know, the weakness. But can we talk about the best support crew move of the day, the glitter
cannon. Also known as the attempted assassination.
the glitter cannon.
I think I missed this.
You missed this. So there was this one. I peeped this woman. She was on the railing right behind me for ages, and she had this kind of rainbow tube. And I was like, is it a rainbow flag? Is it, you know, like, more power to you, girl. Like, go hard. What is it? Is it what? And I was like, I'm really interested to that. You know, when you kind of catch things out of the corner, you're right. This woman, she's really just patiently waiting. Is it a magazine? Is it an umbrella? Is it what? She comes up to you, Gina. she's like, oh, here my runner's coming in and I've got this. And I'm basically, it's one of those things. Have you seen the YouTube videos where it's inevitably dudes who like fire a glitter cannon into their own dick? You know, those ones that they're the tube and they pop it and they, do you know?
No, I haven't
you?
This
well, bit. That's what you need to do when you go home is look up glitter.
Do not Google glitter gun dick. Okay, don't do that.
But, or glitter gun, glitter cannon mishap.
Right. Okay, all right.
And
it's gonna be trending.
And she was dead set that she had this glitter cannon.
She asked for permission.
And yeah, of course, she's like, can I fire this glitter cannon into my best friend's face at the end of?
She didn't say that
at the end of 100 miles.
I don't even know what a glitter cannon
okay,
is.
Okay, it's a tube with an explosive charge in it, and you twist the thing and it goes bang like that, and it shoots a thing of confetti and glitter and propellant.
Holy moly.
At a sweaty runner.
A sweaty runner who's been running for 35 hours. She hit a run.
No worries.
Yeah, no, sure, be sweet ass, no worries. And thinking that you're going to go like a diffuse thing. This woman comes down the hill, we're cheering her on, you know, Anna, you're doing so good. This woman hides around the corner of the arch. She's hidden in there. This woman, so it was beautiful. As soon as her profile came past, she fired this thing into this woman's face.
I probably thought she was hallucinating.
And she went, like that, and sort of like jerked to the side and then doubled over, and it was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, no, she doubled over. Like,
yeah, we were like, do we have to call medical? Has she died of a heart attack?
Have we allowed this? Have we enabled this crime?
Accessories to a crime.
Sent to a penal colony, wait.
After the shock, she was grateful for what her friend had done for her. But yeah, it was the moments it was we were like,
epic.
Are we going to be charged with manslaughter?
Yeah, no, I know.
I hope there's a live stream that they've recorded this on.
Well, we made sure we're like, you're not going to fire that into your own crotch, are you? And she's like, no, I've totally worked that out. You know, it's a thing. You have to make sure where you're pointing it is where you want it to go. Mm. But that was the best finish of the day, or the best support crew.
Fascinating.
What about your twins?
Oh, I'm in love with those twins. So youngest miler runners, 21 years of age. And they were volunteering at Race Check-In, and then they volunteered by marshalling. So this is Wednesday Race Check-In, canning out race bibs. Thursday, sitting out on course with cowbells, marshalling runners. And then they start their longest run ever. And they just chipped away at it and got it done. And I just think that's so cool. Like just such, you know, real givers. Yeah.
And you'd call them in over the line at UTA, hadn't you?
Yeah, so at UTA. So UTA falls on Mother's Day, and their whole family was running. So the girls were about an hour ahead of their mum, and I think their mum was a half hour ahead of their dad or something like that. And so I was giving them grief at UTA saying, you know, make sure you've still got time to sort out your Mother's Day present, get it sorted before she arrives sort of thing. And they remembered that, and so when I saw them at check-in, they're like, "Oh, Ella, you know, we're doing this," and it was really nice to catch up with them, and hear about what they were doing.
And their brother did the 50K as well.
Yeah. So he just turned 18, so they ran the 50 together.
How good! Now, you have someone cornered you on the finish line, and we have to actually make amends.
Yeah, we need to make an apology. Have we got some serious music to play or something? In the miler.
I'll get the glitter cannon.
Just fire it straight at me, into our faces. At the miler finish line, I stand there, call the runner in, Ashley Harrink, and he crossed the finish line, and then he just marched straight towards me, and he says, I came in 5 seconds behind Andrew McDowell at Tarawera, and so you didn't call me in. And I was like, we didn't? And he's like, no. And I've been thinking about this for a long time. So anyway, we'd had you know, there was plenty of time, of course, with the miler finishes this time around. So we got his dues. But Ashley, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for not calling you in at Tarawera. Perhaps we should reenact it. And here he comes, Ashley Harrink in the Tarawera 100 mile. Bring it home. Is that okay?
I'll be Ashley.
He must be really fast because he's just behind Andrew McDowell.
No, Andrew had an injury.
Oh.
Oh.
Quick, go back and rewind that bit. Get rid of
we'll
that.
We'll cut it out in post.
Oh, no. I thought I'd made it good. I thought I'd made it good.
And no, he is. So Andrew having an injury is like a fast person. So and Ashley is fast.
Well, Ashley is fast. He did 22 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
On this course.
Yeah.
You know, at 22 hours, 22 minutes, and 26 seconds.
So he would have been around 18 hours at Tarawera.
Yeah, he was fifth. That's what Andrew did. He was fifth here. And so yeah, Ashley. I apologise and thank you for your kind words about Dirt Church Radio, and we will make sure to keep an eye out for you at any future race and ignore Andrew McDowell.
And Ashley, that was Eugene saying that it Andrew had an
not,
injury.
That was not. Ali, you need to stick up for me here.
That was Ali Pottinger.
That was Ali. Ali, don't say that.
And that is why I'm not in charge of this podcast.
Right, we should wrap things up. But before we do, there's a bunch of other races on. Like as we're recording, there's some going on right now, isn't there? This Valley Ultra, the Wild, obviously, with its number of races. Crush the Cargill is on with a variety of
inaugural
100
miler at Crush the Cargill.
Yes,
how good
that as well. Have you got athletes running sort of across the schedule?
Yeah, totally. I've only seen a few little pics on Facebook since it's been such a busy day, but I have seen some really beautiful pictures from all of those courses.
Yeah,
so hopefully everyone's having a great time and giving it their best.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to, and we've talked about this a lot, haven't we? We talked about it off mic, that Tarawera history.
Yeah, 15 years.
15 years, yep. History. It's stories. Culture of the race, you know, people coming, people going, people have done it multiple times. Same with Ultra Trail Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of the originals. At one time, it was the fourth biggest ultra in the world. When it was, you know, I remember that sort of thing, and people just going for it. This is new.
Yeah.
So I think this is one of the things that we are. Second year, first year, that it was sort of the original courses as it was intended to. I'm so excited that this is this, you know, the traditions that people are trying to start, that this does take off and it does become something that has those things as well. Like all those people today, the 2,750 people who took part are going to go home and go, gosh, that was tough. They're going to tell their friends, and there'll be one friend who'll go, well, if he says that's tough, maybe I'll do that. Or you've got to come with me and do that. Or you've got to come with me and do that. Or I'll step up this year and I'll do this. Or I'll back up and I'll do this. And it feels like we're at the start of something absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes, because it's a beautiful area. It's an amazing destination. Incredibly challenging courses, but we'll see what happens there. And stories, lots of new stories, lots of new connections, or ones that are being built upon. There were heaps of previous UTA runners as well. And kind of following up about Tarawera, you know, we talk about it a lot when we're on the finish line because it's something that we're really proud of, you know. Yeah. It's our community that we're ingrained in, and it's an area that is absolutely beautiful and great for people to visit. So it's an easy sell, and it's so nice when you can see people and share experiences at lots of different events.
Yeah, I mean, this place is beautiful as well.
And the other aspect is that connection to land, isn't it? Like, yeah. At Tarawera, yeah, we feel that, don't we? And we're very conscious of it, and that's something that's going to have to grow here as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that was kind of part of why I and same for you guys, I'm sure, wanted to get out on the trails and really, you know, create memories and soak up the feeling of the land and to be able to share stories about it.
Someone did put on our Instagram, like when we posted a story and it was by the river and stuff. Did you see that? And they were like, legit the most snakes I've ever seen in my life. Like, be careful.
Yeah.
Be careful. And then there was the guy that came across before.
Yeah.
Who was like, what was it?
There's a red belly black snake. Yeah.
And I was like, is that bad?
Quite poisonous, Matt, yes.
What, pink echoes? Is that bad?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it's not bad. He had a knife in his shorts. Yay. Like, yeah. Oh yeah. He had a knife tucked in his shorts, so he probably could have sorted it out, but.
You whacked it with your microphone.
Yeah. Old mate could have got it with a glitter cannon.
Glitter cannon. Why not? Why not?
Three of us together, him with a knife, me with a microphone, her with a glitter cannon.
That would have done the deal. Ali, thank you so, so much. It's been an, you know, it's always such an, I mean, it's like being in the presence of royalty.
It's an honour.
Standing at the finish line with you, you know, and Kerry, and you are, we always say this, don't we, on when we've done podcasts or been at events where you guys haven't been, that one thing that is so evident to us and really strikes us is just the love and the araha for Squadrun. Mm. And that was evident again here today. So many, you know, so many Squadrun shirts, so many squaddies coming across the line, so many people coming up to for selfies with you.
And absolutely.
And wanting to say thank you. You know, it's astonishing and quite remarkable what you and Kerry have created, and not just coaching, but a community.
Thanks. Yeah, that's I don't know what to say to that. It's I think we just feel lucky to know so many wonderful people and to be part of their hobby, which they love, and some of the best moments of their lives. That's part of the attraction of being on the commentary team and to be able to share these things with people.
On the 1-2 of people asking for selfies, you know, on the one hand, you've got international ultra running superstar Lucy Bartholomew, and then you've got you. And I got to say, you know, the finish line, it's there or thereabouts.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right. We should go and have something to eat, sort of become human again. We should say thank you to everyone.
Yeah, we should say thank you. I mean, thank you very much for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. You can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on all the podcast platforms, like and follow if you fancy, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Don't forget to send in your greatest run ever. We did get one person come up to us and say, I'm going to send in a greatest run ever, which you never say. Please don't say that, because then we like hold you to it. We will hunt you down and make you do it.
Just but then they explain the thesis of it, and yes, it sounds like it's going to be...
It's going to be a great one.
Full good.
It's so going to be, yeah, full scene. So anyway, come up with your greatest run ever. Send it in. You can have a read of them on the website. Get inspired. Have a laugh. Have a cry. Because you'll encounter the full range of emotions there as well. Send them in to us, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Scott Running, for the Faster, Currens, and Cielli. Thank you to all our Patreon patrons and Wild Things, and we'd like to thank the team at Ultra Trail Kosciuszko for being so generous as to have us over. That was wonderful. Please stay tuned for our show in 2 weeks when we have another great guest lined up.
Hei kona. Thanks, Rigby.